This is July 1975. This is Anthony Phillips here, and I have Joan DeVerle by my side, who I'm going to ask a few questions about early Scientology. How do you do, Joan?
Hello.
Now, I'd like to start off by asking you this question. How did you come into Scientology?
Well, it's a fairly long story, so I'll cut it short. The main thing is that for several years I had been looking for something. I'd been looking for the answer to quite a lot of things, and I'd read practically every book that had been written on psychology, and that obviously wasn't the answer. And then, quite by accident, I got hold of a copy of Fundamentals of Thought. And I'd only read a few pages of it, and it made complete sense to me, and I realized that that was what I was looking for. And I got in touch with Fitzroy Street, and within a very short time, I'd gone there and had arranged to... I'd done a communication course to start with, and then I was so impressed that I decided to do a full HPA course.
Oh, I see. And when was that?
It was the end of 1956 that I discovered Scientology.
Mm.
And it was directly after Christmas, just after they'd moved into Fitzroy Street, and I started the HPA course.
Oh, yes. And can you tell us something about the HPA course? What was it like then?
Well, there was an almost unbelievable difference between then and, say, the briefing course when I did it.
Yes. In what way?
Well, for one thing, on the HPA course then, there were no check sheets as such. We had to read certain books. The curriculum of the course was put on a large check sheet on the wall so that we knew what was coming next. And we didn't know quite what it consisted of. We got our data mostly from lectures from the director of training, who was also at that time the HPA instructor.
Yeah, you had they were called instructors and not supervisors.
That's right, because yes, they did instruct.
Uh-huh.
I found the data lectures extremely, extremely interesting. And quite a lot of the data was a very high level, such as is in 88008 and Creation of Human Ability. Lectures on the tone scale, the no-to-mystery scale, axioms and factors, logics and pre-logics. In fact, we all got an extremely good basis of the basic data.
And how you, it sounds as though you, it was real to you.
It was totally real to me from the word go.
I see. How do you feel it went with the other students? Did they take it in, or was it above their heads, or?
They seemed to take it in.
Mm.
They seemed to assimilate it quite easily. That's my impression.
Okay. And how about the actual auditing, learning to audit and so forth? How did that go?
Well, not having any check sheets and not having any tapes of Ron lecturing.
Oh, were there no tapes?
Well, there were one or two, but they weren't a basic part of the HPA course.
Mm.
We heard them occasionally, and then we had a certain amount of We sometimes had a short written exam on them, or the director of training asked questions, but they were the early tapes, and they weren't packed with the concise data that the later ones are.
Mm. I see. Did you have bulletins?
We must have had some, but yes, we did have a certain amount of. We did have a certain number of bulletins, but there were no checkouts on them, such as are necessary now.
Hmm. Was there any sort of student auditing during the course? How did you learn about how to audit on those courses?
Well, mainly we practiced on each other, and the old processes, all of which I found very interesting. The main thing was, my main impression of the HBA course then was, in auditing there were no model sessions and rather nebulous rudiments. There was no strict framework to the session. So therefore the control of the session was much less. In fact, the whole session and the result depended completely on the student. And the students then, I know, felt a very high degree of responsibility because they couldn't fall back on any set pattern.
Mm. I see. What were the course hours? Approximately.
We started at 9. It was 9 till 1 and 2 till. It was either 5:30 or 6.
Mm. And then you were finished?
Finished for the day, yes.
Yeah, I see. Were you using e-meters on that course?
No e-meters. That was one of the strange things. We knew about e-meters. We didn't study them. We saw various old-type e-meters about and wondered how on earth they worked. I remember seeing one of the old ones, and it was simply covered with knobs and buttons and goodness knows what. It was like an organ console more than anything else.
Oh, yes. But you didn't use them.
We didn't use them.
No.
They came in shortly. They did come in before I had finished the HBA. Just before
I
finished.
Oh, did they? Oh, yeah.
They came back. No, I'm sorry. They didn't come back before I finished the HBA course. It was some time afterwards.
Yeah. When was this HBA course?
1957.
I see. And what was this, the exam for the end of the course, how did they pass you as a good auditor?
Well, there was a certain amount of written, which was given by the HCO secretary, and the practical part of the course was done by the completing student auditing an incoming student on the processes that they'd learnt.
It was a sort of intensive, 25-hour intensive, was it?
Yes, it was.
Something like that.
Yes.
Oh, yes. How did that work out?
It seemed to work out all right. Anyway, that was the way they did it then.
Yeah. Okay. What was this about the PE course? Did you learn to teach the PE course there? Were you told how to teach a PE course?
Yes, each student had to do four. Each student had a turn at doing four sessions of PE course delivered to the other HBA students. And the communication course, which is separate from the HBA course, joined in this. and it wasn't looked forward to by the students because they rather let their hair down and gave the student PE instructor as bad a time as they possibly could. And sometimes the DFT came in the middle of it and put a stop to the fun and games, but otherwise it was very, very good practice, particularly in confronting.
I see. By the way, did you have TRs on that course?
Yes, TRs, the TR0 was there to some extent.
How do you mean to some extent?
Well, we did it, it was more permissive. The drills weren't written up with the start and flunk and...
Oh, yeah, and, yeah.
And that, it was, the whole thing was much more permissive.
It was more dummy auditing than TRs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What sort of people were there on the course? Can you remember the age group and education and so forth?
I should think the age group was somewhere between 20 and 35, something like that. As near as I can remember.
Mm. And this was a full-time course?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. How many were on the course?
About 18 to 20, as far as I can remember.
Yeah. And how long did it take? Was it one of the... Because you didn't have a check sheet, and I can remember courses where you were on the course, and then they changed the check sheet just as you were going to finish.
Oh, well, they did the same thing then.
Oh, did they?
It wasn't changing the check sheet, but things were added, which we had to stay back to do.
Oh, I see.
For example, the CCHs were introduced.
Yeah.
As a very special, right in the middle of the course. These fabulous CCHs came from Washington, and we had to drop everything and start training on them.
Yeah, that was CCH 1, 2, 3 and 4,
yes.
Was it? Yeah.
And it was at that point that that tremendous precision started to be introduced.
Oh, yes. How do you mean that?
Well, it was mainly the great precision of the give me that hand.
Oh, I know. It was the... Control was emphasized, positive control
was emphasized.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I remember that. In other words, how was it like before that came in?
Rather permissive.
Yeah, well, how do you mean by permissive?
Well, compared with a session as it is run now, the sessions didn't really have a proper beginning. The auditor just more or less slid into it. That was the feeling I had, and quite frankly, I always felt that my session beginnings were always rather shapeless, and I think everybody else's were as well. We didn't have that lovely, precise, smooth model session to build the session into.
Mm. Well, how about when did you end the session? How did you know when to end the session?
Well, to a great extent, you had to use your judgment, you see, because you weren't using a meter. So there was no such thing as floating needle. And good indicators hadn't even been mentioned at that period.
Oh, well, what did you use?
As far as I remember, one used one's own judgment and observation.
Yeah, I see. I think, as far as I can remember, there was something at one time about you could end the process when the previa had a cognition or three comlags the same length.
Yes, it was three comlags the same length on a repetitive process.
Yeah, which would include CCHs.
Yes.
Yeah.
A cognition, certainly. And those really are the only basic rules for ending a session that I can remember at the moment.
Yeah. So you were looking out for those things as you were ordered
yes.
to. Yeah. Okay. Now I'd like to go on to something else now, Joan, with your kind permission. PE courses. You taught the PE course in London for a while.
Yes, I did.
Can you describe what was on the PE course? What was taught?
Well, as far as I remember, more or less the same thing. I was going to say the same things as now, but I don't know what is taught now. We did the communication formula and the definition of communication, the we did the tone scale, we did some of the basic axioms, the very basic ones.
You?
Yes, but that was only for a certain time, as far as I remember.
Mm. When you say basic, do you mean the first 10, like what
yes.
MEST is and matter, energy, space and time?
Yes,
and,
those.
The Theta, what? Axiom 1? Did you do that one? Life is basically a static.
We did it, we got up to, for a short time, we got up to that on the last evening.
Yeah. Were you getting the syllabus given to you, or were you deciding what you would teach?
Well, it was laid down what we did each evening, you see.
Oh, I see. It's all in the hat. So every
in
time...
the hat.
Yeah, every week was the same.
Yes.
Hmm. What sort of people were you getting into the PE course?
As much as I can remember, they were mainly people who were really looking for something. And also, all students, all communication course and HPA students had to attend the PE course as part of the part of their training.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always quite a few of those students on the course.
Oh, yes. I think I also remember that sometimes the HGC pre-clears also had to attend PE course when it was thought they didn't have enough data.
Yes, that's right. I'd forgotten that. They did have to.
Mm. So you had those two groups of Scientologists. You had non-Scientologists also.
Oh, yes, completely new people.
Yes.
Sometimes.
I see. And how did they come to know about the PE course, do you know?
A lot of it was by recommendation from either students or pre-clears or people who'd already been to it.
Mm. Mm. And was there any particular method of teaching it laid down? Was it a straight lecture and they just listened, or...?
It was a straight lecture with... any necessary words and diagrams, words written on the blackboard, explanations of what they meant from a Scientology point of view, and how it could be applied in everyday life. And the students also had to give their own examples to show their understanding by giving examples of how it could be applied in everyday life.
Mm.
The other things that were in the PE course mostly were cycle of action, cycle of control, and those sort of things.
Mm. Okay. Would you say, was the PE course then the only way that people came into Scientology?
No, it wasn't the only way. The only letter promotion that went on was done by the staff auditors when they'd finished their work in the afternoon. And the registrar had to write a certain number of letters each week. But there wasn't such a post as a letter registrar in those days.
Oh, I see. So the registrar was writing letters in between talking to people?
Yes.
As best she could.
As best she could, yes.
Were you registrar one time?
Yes, I was.
Oh, you had to do that then?
I had to do that, yes.
I see. I'm also rather interested, you were on staff at London. Can you describe how large London was with regard to the number of staff it had?
I find it rather difficult to remember that, I should think. There may have been about 30, but I doubt if there were any more.
And how many staff auditors?
There were 5 at the time when I was a student.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. 5 staff orders and a D of P.
Yes.
Can you tell us something about, you were saying, well, obviously, in those days there was no cramming. There was no qual.
No.
What happened with staff members learning their post? How did they get the hang of what to do and so forth?
Oh, well, there was the hat was written up by the person who had last done the post. In fact, on leaving a post, one had to write up one's hat with every action one had to take in order to cover the post, what one had to do, when one had to do it, and in some cases the reason for doing it, just to clarify any particular point. The actual hat consisted of a dark green folder with certain bulletins in, or mimeoed sheets of the relevant sections of bulletins. All this was known as a staff member hat, and it was a compilation of bulletins and policy letters which covered the post, but they didn't amount to all that much in those days. And we didn't have any checkouts on them.
You didn't have any checkouts?
No, we were expected to know them, but we didn't have any checkouts.
Sort of, what happened if somebody didn't know them or made a mess of his post?
Well, and they were taken over the written hat by the HCO secretary.
Oh, I see.
Until they did understand.
I see. So they were sort of coached by the HCO sec.
That's right.
Until she was satisfied
that they could do their post properly.
Yeah. So there was this. So in other words, you could almost say the HCO sec was acting as qual.
Yes. Exactly.
Must be quite busy.
Particularly as she used to give the written exam for the HBA course as well.
Oh, that's right. Yes. And also certs, issue certs. Certificates.
Yes, she was certs and awards.
So the whole of the old qual, the new, that present qual,
was done by HCOSEC.
HCOSEC, yes.
Yeah.
And I remember too at that time, when I was on staff, certainly, HCO was a completely separate entity. And the impression, I didn't work in HCO, I worked in HASI. And I very definitely got the impression that only the most holiest and high people worked in HCO.
Oh, yes, well, that was the impression in those days, anyway.
Yes. It's to me, somewhat different than it is now.
Yes.
But I remember thinking, I'll never be good enough to be in HCO. Now, can you explain a little bit the relationship of HCO to the org? Because in those days, it was sort of... HCO was a separate org to the org. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, there was actually a very great separateness where HCO was concerned, because whoever was HCO sec was in very close communication with Ron, and everything that he wrote or wanted to communicate went to HCO sec and nowhere else. And she was responsible for... seeing that the the staff members in the org got that information when it was required, but she was definitely the guardian of everything that came from Ron.
No, I see. So in other words, what was it, the association secretary was the head of the org?
Yes.
If there was a comm from Ron to him, then the HCO sec would get it first.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Were you there at all when Ron was in the org?
Oh yes, I was.
And how did it work out then?
Well, there was the place absolutely sizzled when he was about. That's the only word I can think of to describe the atmosphere. Was completely electric.
Yeah.
He just galvanized everyone into the most tremendous activity, and impossible things got done, and students on the HPA course became imbued with the most tremendous enthusiasm, and everything felt a lot easier than it had before. And to meet him on the stairs was an absolute high spot of the week, you know, and if he spoke to you, he was absolutely marvellous.
Yeah, very interesting. Also, I just come thought of something else. Statistics. What sort of statistics were going on in those days?
Well, there were no graphs as we know them now. No. No departmental graphs that had to be given in each week or anything like that. The association secretary kept an eye on the income, and it was up to him totally to do something about it if it went down.
I see. Then there was no question of course there were no conditions in those days, were there?
No.
There was no question of, so for instance, an auditor didn't have a stat he had to keep.
No, there weren't any stats at all. The whole thing was extremely permissive, and was the whole org was run entirely by the HCO sec and the association sec.
Yeah, I see.
It was totally up to those two.
Okay. Well, it's one day later now, and Joan and I have just listened to this tape, as we've recorded it so far, last night, and Joan has a couple of comments she wants to make on things which were said there. So we say over to you, Joan.
Well, the first comment I'd like to make is really a correction of a statement I made at the beginning. I stated that I had read nearly all books on psychology, which of course is a great exaggeration. What I should have said was I'd read all the books I could get hold of on the subject.
That's in connection with why you came in Scientology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Was there more you wanted to say on that?
No.
No?
I just wanted to clear up that exaggerated statement.
Okay. Now let's go on. There's something else you wanted to say.
Oh, yes. A question on the PE course. I did say that we did cover some of the axioms, but I remembered afterwards that we had what was known as an advanced PE course in which we covered the axioms, among other things, but that was only run for a limited length of time, and we dropped it shortly after it had been started. So, as far as the PE course, the generally run PE course was concerned, we covered just basic data which could be applied to everyday life by anybody, communication formula and definition of communication, the ARC triangle, cycle of control and cycle of action. And that gave everybody scope for finding out what was going on and what of Scientology they could use to improve their everyday life.
Well, now, we've been talking a little bit about this, and We came across one thing which interested me and Joan very much, and that was, I'll give you a bit of history here. Joan was teaching, you were teaching the PE course in what year?
It would be 1958.
Now, I was teaching the PE course in Dublin in 1957, and I was very enthusiastic about this PE course. In fact, I might add that my first major reality on Scientology, and perhaps my first reality on Scientology, you might could almost say, was in teaching that PE course. Because for 6 months I taught the same very basic things which Ron Joan has just stated, over and over and over again, week after week, continually trying to get other people to cognite on them. And by golly, did I cognite on them during that period. I was getting cognition. Every week I would get cognitions on ARC and on communication and all these basic things. But the thing which I wanted to go into here now with you, Joan, is the method of teaching the PE course. Because Joan and I have just talked about this, and it's been changed a bit, I almost feel afraid that it's been lost, although it is down on tapes, Ron's tapes, how it was taught. I'm going to turn this tape over now. Now, this talking about the method of teaching the PE course, which I think was fantastic, it required somebody who was very able, I would say, who was willing to grant beingness, and able to grant beingness, and did do it. And the name that we knew it by was teaching by agreement. Perhaps you would, Joan, describe teaching by agreement.
Well, by writing the various definitions and words that you were going to use on the board, you would then get the student's contribution to what was going on, and get them to either give their own definition or their own understanding of a word or an idea, and go from one student to another. You could even let them discuss it among themselves, only you didn't want to let that happen too much, or you lost control of the whole lecture. But sometimes quite heated arguments would arise on the meaning of some particular word, which was a very good thing, providing it was kept under control by the instructor. And the amount of agreement always developed to such an extent during the course of the evening that people who had perhaps been at loggerheads to start with were in total agreement afterwards, and they were having cognitions all over the place. And I practically always noticed that the students during the course of the week developed a tremendous causativeness over their own opinions, and they finished up by valuing not only their own opinions but granting beingness to other people's opinions as well.
That's very interesting, yes. I can add here, I can remember the way I ran it was we'd ask one person in the group for what he thought, for example, communication was, or how he defined communication. And you would get something out of that person, a contribution, an idea, and then go over to another person and say, well, now, so-and-so has said so-and-so, do you agree with that? And you'd then let the other person give his opinion, whether he agreed or not, and you would go round the class, and the way I ran it, it'd probably be a good idea to check what Ron said on the tape, but the way I ran it was going round the course and in the end getting them to all agree on one definition for communication, which I then put on the board. And this didn't necessarily have to be Axiom 28. They might come up with something completely different, but you were game enough to see if that was accurate in accordance with Scientology or not. Was this somehow how you did it, Joan?
Oh, yes, that's very similar. And I experienced that manifestation among the students as well, that development of causativeness. And they finished up by being much more analytical and much more able to see what was happening with the various basic mechanisms and to be able to use them for their own better survival and other people as well.
Yes. And I've now just suddenly remembered something. I can't remember my axioms, Dianetic and Scientology, by heart. But isn't there some axiom about self-determinism being the ability to accept or reject data? Something in that nature?
Something like that, but I don't remember.
I can't remember what it was, but this was what was happening with those people. They weren't being indoctrinated and told, Scientology says that, believe it. They were being asked to evaluate, was that right or not? What was it? And so forth. And Scientology being practically the truth anyway, when they examined close enough what communication was, they came up with, in their own words, the Scientology definition of it.
Yes, they did, and of course that was a very important feature, the difference between getting their agreement, which was always used. You got their agreement, you didn't force any agreement on them, and there was certainly no indoctrination, because you were really making them much more causative.
Yeah. I know, as a sidetrack, I can always remember, this was a bit snide of me, but I had somebody who was really a little bit nutty, I would consider. And I was talking about something or other, and he suddenly said, what about the dollar? And this had no connection at all with what we were talking about, and I was a little bit flummoxed, I think, but I forget exactly how I did it, but what I did was make a very strong point about, when I was talking about the tone scale, that there were certain, the sub-zero levels of the tone scale were people who acted completely automatically, and I sort of worded it so as to make it sound as if I was pointing to this fellow. This is something which I did a little bit, was sort of a snide evaluating. I'm not sure whether this was at all standard tech, you would get in the class during the week people acting on certain tone levels, and I would give examples of those tone levels which were practically what those people had done during the week, but it was done in such a way that they weren't forced to accept that. They were still at liberty to accept it, except as an evaluation. They were still at liberty to decide whether this was or wasn't true for them. I don't know if you ever got up to tricks like that.
Well, I did get up to a few tricks, such as bringing on somebody who was obviously very, very shy and sitting or even cowering in the back row and almost wishing he wasn't there. And one could always very, very gently bring them out so that at the end of the week they were on an equal with the more forceful members of the class, which was very rewarding.
Yes. The changes that occurred in those PE courses were quite phenomenal.
Oh, yes.
I can also remember, I don't know if you had it at your time, but what we had to do was to set them homework every night.
Yes, we did as well.
What sort of homework was it you set them?
An observation. We made them observe what they had discovered. We didn't say learnt, discovered. During the course of the evening's work, going home on a bus or underground or walking, and making them observe these things actually in action, and then reporting them as an example at the following class.
Oh yes, the homework that I can remember that we used to do was always a doingness thing. Yours sounds more like observation. But we would say, for example, after we had done ARC, we would say, go home, or we would say, by tomorrow night, I want you to get somebody to do something using ARC.
Yes, because well, that was a good way of doing it. And that could might easily have happened to be given as an example.
I see. I can always particularly remember one girl, I think she was about 18 or so, a typist or something. And what she did was to get her mother, her brother, her younger brother, to mend a puncture in a bicycle by using ARC. And she came back really overjoyed. She thought she could, it was impossible to get her brother to do anything. And she had done it. They all came up to her on this homework.
Oh, yes, they did. I remember they did when I was doing it.
I think we've got a bit carried away with this PE. I was very enthusiastic about the PE and the way it was done. Are there any other comments you think we could usefully make about that, Joan? Pause for thinking. It was that the keynote as I had it was that everybody there must contribute, but must be got on their own gradient to contribute.
Yes, and something one had to watch out for was that there was always the bright student who loved talking and would always pop up with some comment or suggestion. Well, you didn't want to let him run the whole evening. You wanted to bring everybody in.
Yes.
And not miss out anybody, and let it be seen that you were going to bring everybody in and making everybody join in.
Yeah.
And that was very important.
Yeah. Well, I think we've probably said all we need. The only thing I would add here is, while we were discussing this a moment ago, you said something about, and I rather agreed with you, that the result of this PE course was that you got a person. And this, of course, is something that Ron has emphasized in books, that you got somebody who took and accepted data of Scientology not because Ron said it or because an important person said it, but because they, first of all, weighed it up and found it was true for them. And you therefore got a person who could reject data.
Yes, I noticed that happening too. And it was mainly that feature of the whole course that people did find out that those things were true for them.
They were thinking for themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I can add one more thing to this. This has perhaps regenerated an old goal of mine, talking about this PE, because I was always very enthusiastic about it. And the thing that I would say, just to end this off, is that I believe at a certain point teaching by agreement was stopped by policy for some reason or other, and I think the reason tied up with the fact that it could be misused. It could end up in a sort of indoctrination, or somebody who was on compulsive control had to have people agree with him. The essence of agreement or teaching by agreement isn't that the audience must agree with you. It's more that they shall come to a common agreement amongst themselves and be free to do it. So I think that was one of the reasons why it was began to be frowned on a bit. In other words, the person who does it must be grant beingness. And also the last point that I came across, now I've thought in recent times living in Denmark that I would like to do this again, and we come across what I feel is an essential part of the attribute of a person who is doing this teaching by agreement: a very high level of communication, to the degree that when somebody in the audience who is shy and embarrassed gives you a definition, you understand it first time. You don't have to get him to repeat it, which will make him even more shy and embarrassed and feel that his communication is poor. And you must also, I felt, be in such good communication that it would often happen that the main person was talking and somebody else would make a comment to a neighbour or something, and this might be something which they considered not very important, but which actually would be an important contribution to the thing, and you had to be enough on the ball to hear the various things were going on, understand them, and fit them into the whole framework. I don't know if you have any comment you want to make on that, Joan?
No, I can only emphasize that what you said is certainly true for me, and a big factor in the success of a PE course was a degree of ARC and granting of beingness that the instructor was able to give to the students.
Hmm. That was fine then. Thank you, Joan, for your contribution to this tape.
Right, well, I found it very interesting.
Good. Well, we'll end it now. End.